Mighty God, we give you thanks this night for the love that you have shown to us through the sacrifice of your Son. Help us, God, to bear witness to that love tonight, that experiencing it, we may share it with the Lord. Amen. Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
It's good to see that some of you who are a little later filled in this side of the church. Before you got here tonight, there were like six lonely people on the left side over here. It's now a little more balanced. This is also the debut of our new sound system. I hope you all can hear us. And if not, I can promise you it's user error and not these wonderful new speakers that are next to us. So let us know how it goes. We've been on a bit of a spiritual an emotional roller coaster over the last 40 days. That's what Lent is for us. If you remember way back, about 41 days ago, we had our Show of Tuesday pancake supper here. It kind of begins in festivity. We gather downstairs, everybody wears beads, and we listen to good music, and we pig out on pancakes and sausage. We have this great big party, and it's just all fun and games to be together. And then the next day, we all come back to church. And I assume that the folks who come to church on Monday, Thursday are the exact same crowd that comes on Ash Wednesday. So I assume you were here. You come to church on Ash Wednesday, and you hear those words, remember that you were dust. Dust you shall return. So we start off really high, and then we kind of descend into the depths of our mortality. Remembering that we're going to die. The reason that we do that we inaugurate the season of Lent with Ash Wednesday, with those words, remember that you are dust and dust you shall return, is for all of us to remember that our life in this world is not infinite. It is finite. We should make the most of it. As the Christian poet, Christian Wieland, said, the greatest tragedy of human existence is not to live in time, in both senses of that phrase. Not to live in time, waiting until another day, to live the life that God has called us to live. Not living in the moment. And then all of a sudden we come to church, several weeks later on Palm Sunday. We come in with lots of fanfare, with palm branches and celebration and wonderful music, and our thoughts and our prayers and our emotions are lifted up, watching Jesus process in Jerusalem in great triumph, only to end that service, walking out, knowing that Jesus is going to the cross. And here we come again in this Holy Week, walking into church on a high. It's Monday, Thursday. Jesus is gathered with the disciples in the upper room to celebrate the Passover, to celebrate. It was a party. They were going to roast a lamb. They were going to have a feast. The disciples had gathered together with Jesus in that upper room to give thanks for God's salvation, for God's promise of salvation, for having delivered the Israelites out of bondage in Egypt into the promised land. And there they were with the Messiah, the one who had fulfilled the promises of God, the one who they knew without any doubt was going to fulfill God's promise of salvation. But they still didn't understand how he was going to do it. They saw a triumphal entry into Jerusalem. They saw pomp and circumstance and celebration, and they saw crowds of people gathered around Jesus celebrating his entry, and there they were, his chosen 12, right there with them to reap all the benefits. They were excited. And yet Jesus knows that the next day he is going to die. So in his last night with his disciples, he gathers them around his table, and he shares the bread with them, and he shares the wine. And he says, whenever you eat of this, whenever you drink of this in the future, reversal of roles. Here he is. He's the one who's supposed to save humanity from death and from sin and from destruction. He's the one who is the incarnate Son of God, as the Gospel of John tells us at the very beginning. God of God, light of light, true God from true God, there he is, kneeling down, washing his disciples' feet. And they don't understand at all what he is doing. And Jesus said to them, "Tonight I give you a new commandment, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also should love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." Jesus says this, knowing that Peter is going to deny him. He says it knowing that Judas is going to betray him. He says this knowing that all those crowds of people that shouted Hosanna in the highest to the Messiah as he comes into town are going to shout, "Crucify him," 12 hours later. Knowing all of that, knowing all this betrayal that's coming, Jesus says, "Love one another just as I love you. By that, they will know that you are my disciples." Thomas Merton, in an essay, says, "True happiness is found in unselfish love, a love that increases in proportion as it is shared." What is this love that Jesus talks about? It's a love that's unselfish. It's a love that Jesus, knowing that everybody is going to walk away from him, that everybody's going to run away from him as fast as they can, knowing that all of us are complicit in that, and we do the same thing, that every single person who claims his name and claims to be baptized for all of human history is going to walk away from him just as his disciples did, just as those crowds did. And he gives his life out of love for us. Tonight we are reminded of what that love looks like. We're reminded of what fully living looks like. But what keeps us from it? It seems easy, right? And it seems easy to distill this sermon down to, or this message of tonight, in the Beatles song, "All You Need Is Love." And boy, would that be a sin. Because we all can try to love, can try to walk in the way of Jesus, we try to live this life of discipleship. We know that love is hard. It is not easy. Some people that we try to love don't want to love us back. Some people that we try to love angry with us, find it hard to forgive us. Sometimes love is challenging. But deeper than that, love can be painful. When you give yourself in love to another person, you are making yourself as vulnerable as can be. You're opening up yourself to the fact that you may lose that person or that thing that you love. Opening up yourself to the fact that that person you love may hurt you. You're opening yourself up to pain and suffering and sorrow and grief. And it's the fear of those things that keeps us from loving. It's the fear of being able to, of feeling any of that hurt and that pain and that loss that makes us just want to focus in completely on ourselves. It's the fear that of giving something up that we may not want to lose that keeps us just focused on ourselves, on our own needs, on our own creature comforts, on our own wants. And if we focus all of our lives just on that stuff, then we'll be safe and we'll be fulfilled if we get it. Maybe we might even be happy. But as Merton says, true happiness is found in unselfish love. True happiness is found in making yourself vulnerable. True happiness is found He's in the sacrifice, even in the sacrifice of Christ. Fear keeps us from being open. It keeps us from being open-minded. It keeps us from being open to charity. It keeps us from being open to listening. It keeps us from mercy, from forgiveness, and from love. Fear looks inward to our own safety and our own security and our own well-being. Love is the antithesis of fear. Love leaves us vulnerable to pain and loss and heartbreak and grief, but without that vulnerability and without that love, we cannot know God. Without love, we can know nothing of God. Some of you know that before Hopi and I came to St. Louis, Hopi was the head chaplain of Episcopal High School in Jacksonville, and about 2 months after she became the head chaplain, one of her fellow teachers came on the campus with a gun and killed the head of school, killed Hopi's boss, 100 feet away from her office. And Episcopal is this beautiful campus. It's designed like a college. You know, all the buildings are separate. When you walk on the campus, you walk through this big corridor, and actually the symbol of Episcopal is this massive live oak tree that's really the heart of the campus. And really, to get to any classroom, to any office, you have to walk by the live oak. Sadly, the live oak died after 250 years. It was tragic. But the campus was open. And after the tragedy, after the death of the head of school, there were a lot of people who were afraid. And the first thing that people started asking was, how are we going to secure this place? How are we going to wall it off? We need to build a big wall around the school. We need to keep it so that there's only one entrance and one exit so that nobody can get on campus and do this again. And while that's important to be safe, people also knew that it would have killed the identity of the school. It would have absolutely killed the openness and the welcoming nature of that beautiful campus that allowed people to walk freely, allowed students to spend their time outside, that created this oasis of learning and spirituality and care. And in a moment where I don't think I've ever been more proud of the Episcopal community, the teachers and the board of directors and everybody came together and they said, we're not going to live in fear. We're not walling ourselves off. We're going to continue to be the place that we have always been. Fear tempts us to wall ourselves off. Fear tempts us to keep ourselves from loving, from mercy, from forgiving. And it's why we begin this night, or we begin this trigger, this holy week, with Jesus' commandment, his mandate, to love one another. As we gather at this table, let's remember more words of Thomas Merton tonight. He tells us what it is that we gather to. He says, God's love is the banquet of the kingdom of heaven, to which many were invited by the great king. Many could not come to them because they desired something beyond them, something for themselves, a farm, a wife, or a yoke of oxen. They did not know that if they had sought first the banquet and the kingdom, they would have received everything else besides. To feed others with love is to feed them with the bread of life, who is Christ. Teach them also to love with love that knows no hunger. Let us have courage to come to this table tonight, to receive the love of God. Let us come to this table tonight remembering Jesus' sacrifice, remembering that in giving ourselves, we receive. In giving of our love, we receive love in return, not just from others, but of God. And that's the true path to safety.